Blog Talk Radio.
Universe. This is Sam Maxwell, and air conditioning sounds are all around me as I come to you live from Hell's Kitchen on the latest edition of the Metzian Podcast. We're all over the tri-state right now. There are some storms in the area. I am lucky to not really have too much cloud coverage above me right now. But if you are out there in the rain, be careful, be safe, and without further ado, let me go around the tri-state where first up in Connecticut, Rich Spirago. Rich, you might be weathering the storm right now, just like the Mets are.
Yeah, I keep getting the notices on my phone that there's a severe thunderstorm watched, but nothing where I'm living, at least not yet. So the Mets are doing just fine weathering the storm, and I guess since there's no thunder out my door, I guess I'm doing the same, right?
And, Mike, you know, Mike Lacolan down in Bensonhurst, last week you talked about just how different the weather can be in this very tight space, but the landscape kind of leaves it as such. And you were just saying right now it's completely crystal clear where you are.
Yep. That being said, I'm under clear skies, and I'm looking out my window right now, and perhaps I have a poor angle, but there's not a cloud in sight.
Well, it's not, you know, this is the first time that we're on air since the Max Scherzer news, where he's going to be, because of an oblique injury, he's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks. But I wanted to start, speaking of weather, with Colorado. And Rich, I'll start with you. You know, we were just talking off air how the Mets just don't seem to be able to avoid the crazy Sybil-like weather, like Howie called it, regarding Denver, Colorado. And especially, it doesn't matter what time of the year, especially when it's April, May, or June, they always seem to run into snow anytime they get out there. It's not just rainouts, it's snowouts out there.
Yeah, it is kind of weird because when you see the Mets in Colorado in April, you know, you're thinking, okay, it could snow. It's happened before. Before we went on the air, we were talking about 2013 when Sandy Alderson was shoveling and the players were shoveling. And the Mets went from Colorado actually to Minnesota, played two games in freezing cold and were snowed out the third day. It was just the snowy road trip, right? But when you see it basically at Memorial Day time, you don't think about snowouts. I mean, come on, you might think about a rainout, but think about snowouts in late May. But what I found most fascinating, Sam, was they showed a graphic yesterday, the 24-hour temperature drop from Thursday to Friday in Denver was the eighth biggest temperature drop in 24 hours in Denver history. I think it was 58 degrees. It's wild that on Thursday afternoon, it was 88 degrees in Denver, and they had a winter storm warning for the next day, which just let that sink into your head, right? I mean, come on. But the fact that happened, and it was the eighth biggest temperature drop in 24 hours, that means there were seven bigger ones. I mean, that's insane, you know? But you don't think about it, but it happened, and it's just weird. You know, think about when the Mets were there last year, snowed out on the Friday night, remember that. And then they had a day-nighter on a Saturday where DeGrom went out there in absurd weather, you know, like 35-degree weather. I think remember, those were seven-inning games. He struck out 14, and Mets won the opener of the day-night. They lost the nightcap, then they won. If you remember that Sunday game, that was the game that ended when James McCann – throughout Trevor Story trying to steal with two outs in the bottom of the ninth. Mets had a one-run lead. Stroman had started the game. They had a one-run lead the bottom of the ninth. Story gets on with two outs, tries to steal second. McCann throws him out to end the game, so it's kind of wild. But, yeah, the weather woes in Denver for the Mets, it just seems to follow them when they go there. It's wild.
Mike, I think it says a lot about the difference between 2021 and 2022, the night and day element currently with this Mets team and franchise, that I didn't remember any of that. I mean, I think brava, Rich, for for the way you just recounted last year's Colorado series. But, Mike, I'll tell you, I didn't remember one single inch of that.
You know, what are those really memorable events? Not. But it's zany. It's just crazy. Every once in a while, you know, it snows here in April locally in the tri-state area. But what they got going on over there is just, that's just crazy. And I'll even go as far as saying that, you know, I believe some towns just aren't baseball towns. And there's more than one. There's more than two. I'll leave it at that. I'm proud to say I went to the first Rocky games ever. You know, Rich, did you go to that game? It was opening day at Chase Stadium, Mets versus Rockies.
I did not. It was 93. I know Gooden pitched a complete game, yeah. But no, I did not. And it was right before I started my opening day streak, actually.
I was up there.
Well, they started 3-0 that year, man. You know, the times were living for that series. That was nobody had any idea at that time what Mets fans were in store for. That's for sure regarding that 1993 team. And it is interesting the way these franchises will always be linked, both in terms of 93, but also in terms of 95. I believe that the Mets. Rich, correct me if I'm wrong, also opened Coors Field, correct?
They did. That will ever be known as the Todd Hundley / Dante Bichette game, right? Because Hundley hits a grand slam, and I don't remember the final score, actually. It was in the teens, like 14 to 13 or something like that. Hundley
didn't Eric
grand
Young
slam.
Hit a home run or something?
Well, I know Dante Bichette walked it off for the Rockies off of, guess who, Mike Remlinger. if you remember, he bounced around a little bit, right? He did his time with the Mets. He did his year or two with the Mets, year or two here, there, and everywhere. Left-handed reliever, right? And Bichette walked it off again. So I think the Mets, it was an extra inning. The Mets had scored in the top of the extra inning, whatever inning it was. And it was a multiple-run home run, obviously, off the bat of Bichette that won it. But, yeah, and I remember it was absolutely ridiculously frigid. The game started, it was like in the 30s. It was in the 20s by the end of the game. And, of course, the Mets had to make it painful for their fans and lose in walk-off fashion, right?
Of course, exactly. And you know, the Mets fan and the Mets franchise has been used to things of that nature. And there's a lot of fans out there that are, looking at this season, the rest of the season with trepidation, considering what we're currently going through. But I think the way to start talking about Max Scherzer is to basically talk about what seems to be the narrative of the 2022 New York Mets in that. And I'll start here with you, Rich. If I were to tell you on May 22nd, if I were to tell you that by May 22nd, the Mets would be up in the division with eight games without either Jacob deGrom or Max Scherzer at the front, you'd think I was crazy.
Absolutely. It's a glass half full, half empty kind of a thing, in my opinion. I'll hear what you guys think. So you could say that the glass half empty looks at it as, well, you know, they're not going to play at this pace without Scherzer, and they have a nice cushion, and that if it erodes slowly, they could have Scherzer and DeGrom back, you know, in 6 to 8 weeks and hopefully still be in first place and just kind of go from there. The optimist says you've got an eight-game lead, you still have a good team, Scherzer was only pitching once every 5 days anyway. So you were winning, finding ways to win on the other days. You're getting McGill back. And why not just keep going forward, right? And then when you get Scherzer and DeGrom back, you might be in cruise control come August 1st. So I don't know. It's all how you look at it. I think we Met fans, a lot of us anyway, you know, we look skyward waiting for the safe to fall. And let's just look at it like my opinion is kind of down the middle. Thank goodness they have this big divisional lead. You have to love the way Buck puts it. Buck puts it next man up, you know. We persevered without Jake. We persevered for a couple weeks without McGill. So just keep going, boys, you know, just keep doing it. And then when you get your guys back, get your guys back. Now, granted, the schedule does take a turn in June. I think we've all heard about that. They're going to play the Padres, the Angels. You know, they're going to start playing some different competition. But cliche after cliche here, you play who's on your schedule, and really it just comes down to perspective, in my opinion. What do you guys think?
Mike, I'll go to you with this, to segue from Rich. A lot of Met fans are not just, you know, huge Met fans, but also major baseball historians. And in striving and wanting to strive for an owner and just a team that we recognize as kind of what we've seen on the ether out there, like the Cardinals, there's always the idea of the Cardinals way. We were hoping to eventually see a Mets way, a Metsian way, if you will, that didn't always involve blowing seven-game leads. I think part of what we've continuously talked about is, like, seeing the evolution right before our eyes. And like Rich was talking about with Buck's next man up, there does seem to be this way of doing things that franchise is now starting to instill in anybody involved in their roster. And you can see it literally in front of us permeating throughout the entire, both major and minor leagues.
Funny you mentioned that. Look, the Mets are in a dilemma, and baseball is funny that way. We saw this last year. Mets in first place, the Braves and the Phillies were floundering, and it remained like that for a couple of months, and then we know what happened. Mets are in a bind now. Look, we'd be no better today had we retained Marcus Stroman. He was only one of two pitchers to at least pitch 30 games for us last year, him and Tuan Walker. And we saw how Tuan Walker bulled through that last game, and then he was, you know, his performance today, nice. But we only had two pitchers that, you know, saw 30 games last year, and that was Stroman and Walker. And now, you know, we thought going into the season that Scherzer and DeGrom were going to be those guys, the big 1-2 punch. Well, now they're down. So the Mets are in a bind, but, yeah, it's that next man up mentality. Hopefully they can come through. We're a lot better equipped this year than last year to sustain with Bassett. And, you know, Peterson is on the way back. But you mentioned the minor league, Sam, and Jordan Yamamoto just pitched an inning for the Cyclones the other day in a rehab assignment. Otherwise, at Syracuse, you know, I don't know who we can potentially, you know, call up outside of Thomas Zupacki, maybe Connor Gray. Outside of that, you know, your guess is as good as mine. It's early for a trade. You know, the wild cards mandate that teams hold on to players now because they have a chance, a fighting chance. So this is really in the hands of Billy Upler, and it's up to him to figure this out and come up with a plan, you know, and see if there's anything to do. You better get those phone lines, you know, hot and glowing because unfolds, this season unfolds the way it did last year, oh boy, oh boy. Are people going to start talking about 2007 and 2008 again? Oh boy.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, the pitchforks will be ready in that regard, as they say. But like, yeah, when right now, I think, Rich, you know, if you want to compare what is happening, compare and contrast what is happening this season to last season, it probably more so happened on the offensive side of things, whereas right now it's happening on the defensive side of things. I still think they need to, and this is a totally another subject, but just in terms of comparing, before we get into like who, you know, what we think the Mets need to do, just in terms of comparing and contrasting, last year you saw the Brandon McKinney's and the Brandon Drury's in those lineups. And, you know, regardless of the fact that the Mets probably need a little bit more pop in their lineup right now, the offense is it just seems to have a great approach up at the plate right now. And you're not necessarily getting you don't have the same lineups as you have in May 21st last year. And the pitching, I just think, has Jeremy Hefner that you know, continues to kind of be the silent young man in charge.
Yeah, I mean, comparing the two seasons, you know, last year the Mets were doing it with basically a dominant Jacob DeGrom. And at this point of the season, two things were happening. They were getting ridiculous performances, ridiculously good performances from, you know, the bench mob, right? You had Jaswani Fargas. You had guys like, you know, Nito was playing a lot. You had, as you mentioned, Brandon Drury. You had these offensive players who, you know, everybody was hurt. You were getting guys playing above their heads for brief periods of time. And you had a dominant DeGrom, and you had very good starting pitching. You know, around him, you had Taijuan Walker in the first half of the season, who was doing quite well. David Peterson generally was very good in the beginning of the season. So that's what you had. This year, it's different. You have better offensive players with a better approach, right? You heard it today, if you watched the game today. They were talking about how Eric Chavez has told these guys, look, I don't want to hear you talking about launch angle. I don't want to hear you talking about home runs. I want you to go up there, hit the ball solidly. You'll go the other way when you have to. Do what you have to do to get on base and play a more team concept. And that's what you see. It has had an impact on no one greater than it has on Jeff McNeil. Look at the transformation of that young man. Here's a guy who was, you know, up there, launch angle, trying to jack the ball to the ballpark. Wasn't really his game, didn't care. That's what he was going to do. Well, now Jeff McNeil's back to being Jeff McNeil, and he is a very good version of himself. So now you have better players taking what I think is a better approach offensively, and they're getting it done. And the starting pitching is where you're getting the cracks. You know, last year at this time you had injuries to the position players. Now you have injuries to the starting pitching, but the position players are for the most part healthy, and they have a better approach, and they're scoring more runs. And, you know, it's a bit of a different formula. And then you can look at the other part of it, too. You have to ask yourself this question, and to me it's rhetorical. Is it just that the rest of the division is so bad? You know, I mean, every other team is under 500, and that's enabled the Mets, you know, to beat up on them. They've beaten up on the Phillies pretty nicely. They've beaten up on the Nationals pretty nicely. They haven't played the Marlins yet. What exactly is it? Well, you know, if you come right down to it, maybe it is that better approach they're taking, because that's the difference, right? Maybe it's that offensive approach that Chavez is talking about, that they were talking about during the game today. Maybe that's what's equaling this, you know, why this is different this year and seems to be more sustainable. And I'll throw in one more. They have a different approach. Yes, it seems to be working better. But think about this, too. The Mets are getting almost no offensive production out of third base. They're getting very little out of DH, and they're getting very little out of the catching position. So of the nine hitters in the lineup, a third of those positions, of those spots in the lineup, are giving you almost nothing. So the optimist says, you know, when those guys like Escobar and you know, J.D. Davis, Tom Smith, when those guys start hitting, it can only get better from there. And then if you're getting DeGrom and Scherzer back in the middle of the season, the optimist says, wow, we might be onto something here, right?
Yeah, I want to get into some of those players you mentioned to lean a little bit on the negative. But I wanted to touch upon something you said, Mike, in terms of AAA and starting rotation. And it looks like Thomas Szczepanik, the Mets, this is coming from CBS Sports, the Mets are leaning heavily towards recalling Szczepanik from AAA Syracuse to start Wednesday's game against the Giants, reported by Mike Puma of the New York Post, of course. So looking at what he's doing right now, he's got a pretty solid ERA but that, at 286, but the WHIP is a little high for my taste, 1.32. I forget whether or not he's made a start in the major leagues before, but what do you recall about Thomas Szczepanik, if any?
What most Met fans remember about him occurred in spring training last season, I believe it was. But you're right about the WHIP. You know, that's always concerning, especially at the AAA level. He's hittable, but, you know, he has a high strikeout rate. So, you know, give him a chance. That's all I can say. Just give him the ball and a bag full of confidence and tell him to go out there and compete. Right now, the Mets are in a bind. They, you know, may not have any choice but to turn Stan. So, I'm being the optimist right now. Give the kid a chance. He's 26 years old. I don't think he's going to be riddled with stage fright. I think he'll be fine. You know, will they hit him? Sure. But that's why you have a defense behind him. You know, and if you manage it right, you come out and just get the victory. So I have confidence.
You know, Rich, it's funny to me. This is a situation where the Mets moved to Syracuse to be closer for their AAA call-up, to be closer to Citi Field. But now Thomas from Syracuse is going to have to make his way all the way to San Francisco. However, in a twist of fate with the new Mets regime, they're thinking about it on Sunday instead of the night before when they had 3,000 miles for the person to travel. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. It's just something that it's the comedy of errors that was the Wilpon regime. But anyway, Thomas Szczepanik.
Well, I agree with what Mike said. You know, they have no choice. And so what you typically do is you're down a couple of people. The schedule is not going to allow, you know, you don't want to pitch somebody on short rest. I've never thought that was a good idea, and it's not here a good idea. So you do what teams do. I mean, either you could do a bullpen game, which is possible. They do have Thursday off. So if you wanted to do a bullpen game on Wednesday, you could potentially do that. So that's a thought. But the other thought is you go down and you get your best AAA starter. And if that's the Pucky, you know, I don't quote me on this, but I know he did pitch last year for the Mets. I don't remember. I don't think it was a start. I don't think it went very well. I think in his short stint, it did not go very well for him. But that's the right thing to do. You know, you reach down, you get your best. That's why you have a AAA team. You get your best AAA pitching prospect. You give the guy a shot. Buck was saying it all week. When Scherzer went down, you know, he said, look, nobody's going to feel sorry for us. And so it's the next person. It's an opportunity for someone else to shine. It's an opportunity for someone else to get that piece of exposure in the major leagues. So if Szczepanik's the guy, go for it. Looking forward to seeing him pitch on Wednesday.
And, yeah, you're right. He did get 3.2 innings
pitched last year with like 6 earned runs. So I don't know exactly whether it was a start or not, or just a few innings that he ate up. But yeah, didn't do so well within the ranks of 2021. However, it is no longer that year. As I've said, before the half hour, Mark, I'd like to, let's just have fun before getting to some of those names you threw out, Rich. I just want to, and I'm gonna start with you. I just want to throw it out there. Now that, you know, the Mets are in a position, not the coast, but where, you know, they have some house chips in their pocket, if you will. Now, Jacob deGrom is down. Max Scherzer is down, most likely both till the All-Star break around that time, give or take. The offense needs a little bit more pop. There's a lot of different things that you could do. You're pretty, you know, I sometimes don't cover Major League Baseball enough. So when you're looking out there, Rich, you're pretty covered on it, I believe. I think I say that with confidence. More confidence than I have to really talk about what's going on completely around the majors. So, what should the Mets do when looking around the league and considering their needs, even if it's early?
Well, I think they've already started. Everything that I'm reading is that the Mets have been scouting the Cincinnati Reds. I forget it, M-A-H-L-E. I think it's Molly or Mele, the Red starter. He is one of their, you know, obviously they're going nowhere. So he's one of their tradable commodities. There's always Luis Castillo, who's been rumored to go to the Mets for years now. So they're out scouting the Reds. They've scouted Manaea from the A's, from what I'm hearing. So it's early because you have a couple of gaping holes. Teams are going to try to take advantage of you and make you pay through the nose. So the question becomes, what do you do, right? How do you reconcile those two things? How do you reconcile the fact that you need some more starting pitching, and the other side of it being it's early, they know you need these people, so the price is going to be way up. So what do you do? Well, my opinion, you take a look at this roster and you realize that it's great that you're in first place. It's wonderful that you have a huge lead and great. But this, you have to be honest with yourself, in my opinion, and say that this roster isn't probably ideally configured. You know, Dom, I've said this over and over again, and I'll keep saying it. Dom, the best thing you could do with Dom Smith is trade for him, and he has more value to you as a tradable chip than what he does now, which is he's voiced, we haven't talked about this, but he did state that he would like to play every day, and if it's not going to be here, you know, I'm paraphrasing, it could be somewhere else. So he's probably not a happy camper. He's not going to play with what Pete's been doing. So you have to ask yourself, why are you holding on to this guy? And so he becomes a tradable chip. You look around at third base, J.D. Davis is not helping you. He's hitting below the Mendoza line. Yes, he's hit some balls hard. He's hit some balls in bad luck. That's absolutely true. But again, there's another piece that doesn't really seem to fit. And so what you do then, in my opinion, is you look at these teams that will clearly be sellers. You look at the trade chips that you have. And of course, we haven't even touched on the minor league chips yet, where, you know, the Mets are deep at shortstop in the minor leagues. That's their deepest position. And obviously you have Lindor for 10 years. So maybe you look at trading, you know, Mauricio or one of your middle infielders, and you have J.D. Davis, Dom Smith, and you say, okay, here's what we could offer. What will it take to fill a need? And right now, the needs for this team clearly are in the starting rotation. And I never felt this way until the past week or so, but I do think they need another bat. I think they might have to think about that. Like I said before, they're getting by right now with basically 6 of 9 positions contributing offensively. Is that sustainable? I don't know. I don't think it is. That's a third of your lineup where you're getting nothing. And so you think about, okay, we need a bat. I think the bullpen is fine. I think you'll get Trevor May back in another 6 weeks or so. Diaz is pitching lights out. Ottavino's look good. Rodriguez looks good. I wouldn't focus so much on the bullpen. To answer your question, your need, starting pitching, you have a need, in my opinion, for their bat. You look at your roster, you have an honest conversation with yourself and say, we have some pieces here who don't fit. Where might there be a match for the pieces that we have to fill a need that we have coming back? Maybe you can't fill them all right now, but that's how I think they have to approach it.
You are listening to the Metsian Podcast. And, Mike, so let's, look at one of the more recent seasons that the Mets had to consider what to do at the deadline. And 2015 is where I'm going here. The Mets were obviously in a position where they desperately needed somebody like Yoenis Cespedes to ignite the offense. They are most likely in not only a better position currently, but in a better position to sustain what they've built more than they were able to do so in 2015 with where they were in May. They desperately needed that. When thinking about this team and thinking about all the different positions, just thinking about them getting a Cespedes-type, game-changing player at the deadline in basically everywhere that you'd want them to solidify their potential championship caliber team, and that is offensively, starting rotation and the bullpen included. Even so, just thinking about that, like that's where the dream, we get the teamwork to make the dream work, the way I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, that was a hell of a trade deadline. A couple of acquisitions that year that worked, got us a National League championship. Well said. But that was different. The Mets needed to make that move. They had gone through the rebuilding process. They had all these kids, and they needed direction. And at the time, they needed an injection of life. We remember how that summer went in 2015. Different circumstances than this team. This is Billy Epler's first season. I'm willing to give him a little bit more flexibility than perhaps the next guy. He inherited this mess, so he's got to figure this out. He has some team building to do. I don't know, if you involve, X player, Y player, and Z player in the trade. I don't know how that affects his overall plan. These next 3 years are obviously going to be interesting, and like I've always been saying, 4 years from now, I want this team virtually unrecognizable. Because I want a whole bunch of talent being promoted from the farm. But Rich is spot on. We perhaps do need another bat. And the way this roster is constructed, I'm trying to avoid using certain words, but you can certainly get more productivity out of this roster as a whole. With some different players on it, serving different roles. Because right now, there's a little bit of redundancy and ineffectiveness, and those roster spots could be filled certainly and more effectively. So, that's on Billy Epler to figure out. I would love for them Mets to fortify that bullpen, as Rich says. But this trade deadline, we'll see. I mean, he has the potential to do something big because of all these prospects right now flourishing at Binghamton. Rich mentioned Ronnie Maurizio, and we have Lindor in shortstop, and we'll have him for a while. So that perhaps frees him up. But, could Maurizio and Dom Smith and perhaps another player, be enough to acquire a big impactful player, a big slugger, certain players like that become available for a reason. You know, so unless we're going to knock on some team's door and blow them away with an offer, I'm not sure who we're going to get or where we're going to get that person from. You know, in Cespedes, we found a motivated team looking to unload him. So, I don't know. But I'm just going to allow Billy Epler room to maneuver and not be overly critical in this being his first year as general manager. Yeah, I want the Mets to compete as best they can over these 3 years. I'm kind of noncommittal. I'm kind of, as I've been saying, giving Billy Epler room to maneuver.
So I'll throw a random team out there that I was hearing, you know, some people are kind of hoping tanks, but right now they're doing better recently than they had been. Then they're only 3 games back in the wild card and are 8-2 in their last 10 with a 5-game winning streak currently, and that is the Boston Red Sox. Rich, off the top of your head, do you know, I mean, like, I don't know much about the Red Sox, but I know they're extremely talented and a motivated Boston Red Sox with parts to spare might be interesting to look at.
Well, you know, I've heard that you're right about the Red Sox, by the way. They're playing much better now. And remember, folks, there are 3 wild cards in both leagues this year. So if you look at it like that, the Red Sox got off to a putrid start. They're still 2 games under 500, though they're 8-2 in their last 10, as Sam said. And yet they're only 3 games out of a playoff spot. So I personally think that's good for the game. I think, you know, I would not want to be in a situation where Memorial Day weekend the Red Sox are looking at an almost insurmountable mountain to get into the playoffs. They're a good franchise, great fan support. I'm glad that, you know, they have life up there. No, but in looking at them, and I think, you know, obviously, as you said, the talk of them being sellers has quieted quite a bit because of their recent play. But I've heard that Rafael Devers is someone who could opt out at the end of this season. Well, Rafael Devers is a hell of a hitter. You know, I think he has his defensive challenges, but, I mean, this guy is hitting .337 right now. So, you know, how would you like to have .337 and 9 home runs added to your rock, especially when the Mets need a bat? I don't know if Devers could play third base, but could you imagine going from what the Mets are getting out of Eduardo Escobar, which is very little, and J.D. Davis, which is less than that, and adding a Rafael Devers, who I believe is leading all of baseball, or at least American League, in batting average at .337. Wow. So if he were to become available because of a potential opt-out at the end of the year, yeah, the Mets should be talking to the Red Sox about him. And then you look at starting pitching. I believe Eovaldi is a free agent at the end of the season, and people were saying that the Red Sox might be willing to part with him if they find that, and I don't think they're going to find, but if they did find that they were out of it and became sellers, Eovaldi might be a chip they'd be willing to trade. So, yeah, to answer your question, the Red Sox would be a great place for the Mets to shop. I mean, could you imagine if the Mets could ever pull off a deal like the Dodgers did last year where they got Scherzer and Trey Turner, and the Mets could bring in an Eovaldi and a Rafi Devers? I mean, that would be, oof. I think you back up the Brinks truck for that one to make that deal. I mean, because those are two perfect fits for this team. And I know, again, I don't know if Devers could play third. I believe he does. I believe he can, or he has. And Eovaldi, I mean, just, you know, you saw what he did to the Yankees in the playoff game last year. So, yeah, that would be a great place to shop. But you just hit on something very important, Sam. You know, this is a different year in 2022. I believe that extra wild card team, it's not going to keep one more team from being sellers. It's going to keep several. It might keep, you know, 4 or 5 more teams thinking that they're still in it. And it will change the dynamic. You're going to see fewer sellers this year. Right now, the only sellers to me are
probably the Pirates, Reds, and A's. I can't really think of any other team that is so desperately out of it. The Cubs are hurting too. Could you imagine?
Mets, Red Sox, they match up in terms of the Mets' needs, but when you think about the Red Sox and how they're probably still in it, and that will change the dynamic.
You know, it just makes me wonder even if the Cubs were considering, I know it was a 3-year deal, but I wonder if the Cubs were even considering when they signed Marcus Stroman that he could even be a trade chip as early as this year. But that's a whole nother, I digress there, but like since you mentioned the Cubs. I was looking at all the standings, and the team furthest out are the Cincinnati Reds, and they're only 10 games out technically. You know, it is early is something I've said a lot on this podcast, but it is. And in the American League, there's no team further out than 7 games. So there's a lot to think about. And, you know, Rich, you've mentioned a lot. You've mentioned two people a lot about how they're not giving much to the Mets right now. And so I'm going to go over to Mike with those two names, and that's Dominic Smith and J.D. Davis. And, you know, we've talked recently a lot about Dominic Smith. We said that, even I, who has just been a fan of his since he even got drafted, that it was time for me to recognize that he needed to be used as a trade chip and also sent somewhere where he can get substantially more playing time. You know, I think these two players, Mike, are the crux to any deal that the Mets are going to make. Because they're both, you know, I think Don has more value to this team because of his first base skills than I can. Like, what does J.D. Davis have? A good arm, that's basically it, you know, if he's not hitting. And it sucks for J.D. Davis because he's been hitting some bullets, some absolute serious bullets. I'm sure if somebody could show me his batting average on balls in play, and now he's extremely unlucky, but you see him roping the ball. He's just not hitting him where they ain't.
I agree. It's just tough luck, but they're just not earning their roster spot. They're just not. And you got to think about the other party in this. Who wants them? Who wants a J.D. Davis? I think there's more interest in Dominic Smith, but who really wants J.D. Davis? He's a defensive liability, and like you said, if he's not hitting, he can't out-hit his mistakes. So, some real nitty-gritty decision-making is going to have to take place over him. The hope is we can package Dominic Smith and get value in return. But what team wants him and what team needs him and what team values him? We value him because we're Met fans and we drafted him and we've seen him for so long and we like him. Teams want him. They want our minor leaguers. That's what they want.
So, Rich, you know, you're the one who has mentioned Dominic Smith and J.D. Davis a lot on this show. What is your closing argument and what to do with these two roster spots?
I think you have to move both of them. I just don't see why. Eduardo Escobar is kind of getting a pass here because he's not producing either at third base. But the Mets, you know, they're committed to him a little more on the money side. I don't think he would have any value to another team at this point. So, you know, Davis has a very low contract, and he's not making a lot of money, so he might be attractive to a rebuilding team. The presence of the DH in both leagues opens up some opportunity for J.D. Davis. There might be a team that's rebuilding that says, okay, look, you know, we have to get a DH in here. This guy has shown he can hit. He's hitting. Right now he's hitting in bad luck. We could bring him in. What's he making? You know, I'm sure he's making less than $1 million a year. We could bring this guy in, let him see if he could figure his stuff out. We're rebuilding anyway. So I think there might be some value for J.D. Davis, you know, as a DH on one of the other 29 teams. For Dom, yeah, I agree with Mike. I think there's more value in him because he plays a very good first base. He hasn't hit a home run. I didn't realize this. He hasn't hit a home run in almost a year since July of last season. So a little bit shocking there. So, you know, his offensive production has really tailed off, but you could justify that as saying he's not playing. You know, he needs to be out there hitting, major league pitching. It's true. So I think there's more interest in a Dom Smith, some interest in a J.D. Davis. Who knows? Maybe there's a team out there that wants a young, controllable first baseman, Dom Smith. Maybe that same team would love to add a right-handed power bat for a low cost, J.D. Davis. You know, you could package those two guys. And, you know, maybe it's the A's. You know, maybe you throw the A's as the Pucky or something like that. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying maybe it's some pitcher, you know, a prospect pitcher and those two guys. Maybe for him and I, remember, he's their ace. He's not going to come cheaply. Maybe that's the deal you make. I don't know. But honestly, guys, I mean, I think the deadline is August 2nd this year. On August 3rd, I really don't believe that Dom and J.D. Davis will be Mets. I could be wrong, but again, they don't fit. The Mets have to use them to get back what they need to try to compuzzle here toward a potential championship run, and I don't think you're going to do that with two roster spots with guys who don't really play and don't really produce.
You know, Robinson Cano was really the first domino to fall in terms of opening the roster up to just a little bit better mix and match, Mike. And I do think J.D. Davis and Dominic Smith will be a part of that. But to segue here, Louis Guillorme has completely prospered from Robinson Cano no longer being on the team. And he, right now, I mean, he's just an absolute hitting machine.
there you go. Addition by subtraction. And Robinson Cano, you know, perhaps that was the first step. Again, I'm willing to give Billy Epler room to maneuver. And Robinson Cano is definitely the first step. And Luis Guillorme is, like you said, Sam, performing outstanding. So perhaps, you know, he has something up his sleeve. Let's hope.
Rich, you know, the first, most Met fans' first introduction, with Louis Guillorme was when he caught that bat that slipped out of the batter's hands in spring training. He seems to be just one of those players that you need on your roster, and you know, I don't have a problem if he were just hitting 245 as a defensive whiz, but he seems to have a really good approach for how to become a better major league hitter, and the more that he's able to kind of take that approach with him at the plate and adjust to whatever they adjust back to, he's going to get more playing time.
I agree, Sam. Like when the bat thing, right? And then you say to yourself, okay, here's a guy who could be the 25th man on the roster, you know, defensive whiz, could play multiple positions. Right there, you had me at a low. Right there, I'm fine with that guy being on my team. He can play multiple positions, play them well. Okay, he could be the 25th man on my team anytime. But now you're adding in another part of the equation. The more you see of Luis Guillorme, the more you see that he has a good approach. Like, there's a reason why this guy has such long at-bats. There's a reason why, you know, this guy seems to be up there for 10, 12 pitch at-bats all the time. He puts the bat on the ball. And he knows he's not a power hitter, thank goodness. He doesn't try to be one, thank goodness. He stays within himself. He tries to make contact, slaps the ball the other way. When he gets a pitch he can drive, he doesn't try to launch angle it out of the ballpark.
He hits it hard. You see a lot of hits to right center field when he can you know, get the bat head out. When he does it, he slaps it the other way. And again, there's a reason why this guy has so many long at bats. It's because of his approach. He makes contact. So, dare I say, the Mets may have a gem here. I mean, they may have a guy who you could use him at three defensive positions, which is fantastic for the roster. And he's not your quintessential guy who can't hit, who does that, you know. Here's a guy who's actually putting together a skill to become a talented major league hitter. Going in today, he was hitting 323. So if he could hit you 270, 280 with his defensive abilities, which are on full display today, you might have a gem there. Like Buck says what you said. Buck says the guy's a baseball player. He's the kind of guy that you want on your team, and the Mets should be saying that they're thankful to have him.
Yeah, I think he is one of the untouchables, truly, weirdly enough. You know, we're closing in on the hour, and so I'm going to go around the room. And first, I'll start with you, Rich. What have I not touched on? Where would you like to go?
I think you've hit on most of it. I mean, you hit on Scherzer. You hit on their large lead-in division, you know, what they might need to do or might want to do. I think the good news for this team is that McGill should be back sooner rather than later, so you get an arm back. Now, you're still down your two biggest ones, but at least you get McGill back, so that's good. Other than that, you know, I think if you want to talk about two quick things, I'll just throw it out there. Brandon Nimmo, Edwin Diaz, both will be free agents at the end of the season. I'm not one to say, like, knee-jerk reaction. Somebody has a good week. Oh, extend this guy, extend that guy. You know, we hear a lot of that. But at the same time, Edwin Diaz is the guy now that the Mets thought they were getting in 2019. He is an elite closer. You saw him today. You've seen him all year. So what do you do there? Brandon Nimmo, hell of a player. Like you said, Mike, you know, Billy Epler has decisions to make. You have to give him the room to operate. Okay. He's got a team that to invest in. This team is for real. You don't want to pass this up because you never know what next year could look like. If you're doing well, you want to fortify. Okay, so you've got to think about that. I'll ask you guys the question, and I'll back out. With all that's going on to make this particular team a winner, should Billy Epler be spending some time thinking about extending Nimmo and or Diaz? What do you think?
I will jump in. I will say without a doubt, Rich, you nailed it. Brandon Nimmo has carved out his niche in baseball. He's an excellent leadoff hitter. And, you know, Diaz, he's matured now. Perhaps he has a lot more command over his skills because it's definitely looking that way. And, you know, insofar as team building, you have those two elements now. You have your center fielder and leadoff hitter, and you have your closer. Rich, I'm with you. Find them, lock them up. Those are two positions you won't have to worry about.
Sam?
Well, I I am I'm gonna go and say specifically, I think you guys are completely right, unless you are stealing away the current center fielder for the New York Yankees. That's the only way that all of a sudden this conversation changes. What happens at the end of the year when it comes to the Yankees' relationship with Aaron Judge? Am I one? Yes, he's been injury prone. I don't necessarily want to go deep cut with whether or not the Mets can sign Aaron Judge, whether the Mets should sign Aaron Judge right now, but specifically Nimmo, I think that would be the only big caveat, is that would be a game changer for so many, you know, for a multitude of reasons. and now we have a team, you know, who it's not just a joke that we're talking about that we're throwing that out. I think that with Edwin Diaz, I mean, I certainly think you need to see how this entire year goes. You know, I think that there's specifics and like identifiable examples of maturity compared to my line of demarcation for 2019, which was the rain game, which happened at the, I believe at the end of May as well. And it just, it wasn't his fault, but it threw his kind of entire season into a tailspin. And I do believe that regardless, unless something catastrophic happens, you know, or devastating, to use a word of Mets, you know, negative lore, I would say that you don't necessarily need this season to end with a World Series championship and Edwin Diaz on the mound for that, to know that you need Edwin Diaz. You need to sign Edwin Diaz for either further championships or championships that you're still dreaming of having. It is clear something changed for me the night of the no-hitter. And I saw somebody, and I said this last week, I saw somebody that really owned the moment and seemed to really he was having so much fun. You saw it basically like from the time that he came out, running in from the outfield to the interviews. It was he was the same person, whether the game was on the line or the game was in the books. There was just, it seemed to be a switch was flipped, and Edwin Diaz became exactly who we want him to be on this New York City stage. So, I'm completely in Team Sugar, if you will. And I think you guys are absolutely right regarding Nimmo. I would say, we haven't really talked about Aaron Judge that much on here. That's really kind of just WFAN's turn in terms of the Mets side of things, but that would be the one thing. And so I'll pass it over to you, Rich, to continue that conversation.
About Diaz?
Well, just about in terms of whether that has any credence to you, that would give you reservations if you did have a chance to sign, in terms of Nimmo, if you had a chance to sign Judge.
No. I don't think that – I was having that conversation with somebody today, actually. For what it would take to sign Judge, I just don't think it's realistic, Sam. Like, I don't even give it any credibility. I think people talk about it because they're putting two things together that might happen and trying to make a story out of it, but the story will never happen. What I mean is Judge might become a free agent. From what I understand, the Yankees might be talking to him. Cashman, like, alluded to that even though, you know, he said, oh, I don't want to talk about it all of a sudden during the season, that those conversations might actually be happening, so they might be working toward an extension. So for that reason, he may never hit the free agent market. Secondly, you know, yeah, the Mets have a very wealthy owner, the wealthiest owner in baseball, right? That's great. But at the same time, there has to be some reasonability put into it. And if you think about it, if the Mets were to sign Judge, you got Judge, Lindor, Scherzer. There is a luxury tax. So the Mets would be so far over the luxury tax that they'd be just – it would be ridiculous. I mean, think about it. You know, what are they going to be, like 50 million, 80 million, 100 million over the luxury tax paying all this? Yeah. You don't need to do that. You know, Judge, yeah, he's a great player. It's a lot of home runs, good outfielder, all these things, great. You don't need Aaron Judge to win. The Yankees haven't won a damn thing with Aaron Judge. You know, the Mets could win and do so in a way that's responsible, still exceeding the luxury tax, which I'm sure they will, but you don't need to get ridiculous and have, you know, and pay this guy $40 million a year to go along with Scherzer's 43 and Lindor's 34, and then you have 23 more roster spots to fill. I mean, I just think, to me, it's pure folly. I think it's not even a possibility for, if not because the Yankees will retain him, which I believe they will, but secondly, while, yeah, like we know Cole has a lot of money, it's just way over the top, my opinion.
Mike, finish us on this topic however you would like.
Again, I'm with Rich, and I really don't want upper management bogging down this team over the next 3 years with nonsense. I want complete flexibility. Whatever they can achieve over the next 3 years, I'm all in. Be creative as you want to, but don't do anything foolish. Because, again, in 4 years, I want this team taking a very different direction with most of the talent coming from the minor leagues, and then you supplement with trades and your free agency. I want the team rebuilt correctly. I'm not saying that we need to have a full-blown rebuild. I'm just saying that, you know, I want to be very different from where the Mets are right now in 4 years from now. Some of these players will be here, some of these players won't. But I'm really not interested in giving up all that money to a 30-year-old who, in my opinion, needs to put at least 3 seasons together of complete seasons, of, you know, healthy seasons. That's really my only drawback. But I'm really not interested in that conversation today. I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. My overall feeling is I don't want them bogging down this team with nonsense that somebody has to, you know, unravel 3 years from now. That's not what I'm looking to do.
You have been listening to the Metsian podcast, and we're so thankful you do. And something that I've been trying to make a point of, but I completely forgot about at the beginning of this episode, was to give credit to Adam Spiegel for his 86 theme that is our Metsian opener. So as always, thank you, and big Mets fan Adam Spiegel. So without further ado, let us get to our final word. And I will start, a final word and shameless plugs, of course. So I'll start with you, Rich. Shameless plug and final word away.
Well, thanks, Sam. I am one of the writers for Metsmerized Online. So thank you for the ability to pop that into the conversation. My final word would be persevere. That's what the Mets have to do. They have the big lead. Great. They are down a few people, a few very key people. Okay. Just keep plugging forward. You know, it's been great so far. They've only lost 2 games in a row once all year, which is almost unfathomable. But that is the case. Great. Adversity will come. It already has, and more will come. Despite it all, just keep moving forward. Keep plugging away. And the Mets just need to keep persevering and not let last year happen again. You know, not have a collapse and lose the lead and all of that. Just keep doing the good things you're doing. Fight the battle you have to fight. Next man up, all of that. Just keep on going and persevere.
Thank you, Rich. And Mike, shameless plug and final word away.
Shameless plug, Brooklyn Trolley Blogger. Pay a visit. It's where I conduct my fandom. I'll have a couple of things to say about the Rangers and hockey. But, look, I'm content. We're 6-4 since we last spoke. There's a lot of things going on. But let's see if they can fight through it. Look, that Pete Alonso home run last week in the 10th inning to win the game, that was out of control. That was great. But the team needs to do more of that. They need to out-hit their deficiencies and, you know, out-hit their injuries and out-hit their mistakes. That's where they, you know, need to focus right now. And hopefully that gets us through June. Big game's coming up. So, as you say, Sam, keep pushing.
keep on pushing. And you, I'm going to shameless plug and final word away as well. You can find my other podcast, Bedford and Sullivan, The Story of Brooklyn and Its Dodgers, anywhere that you're finding this one. It's basically just keeping the audience active, listeners, in the research process of my Brooklyn Dodgers TV series idea. So thank you guys very much. I'm going to keep going back to resilience. That seems to be the tale of the season right now. And we have the leadership to help this team navigate the waters, the experience and the leadership to help this team navigate the waters. And I'm in awe every day that I watch them just go about their business in such a precise way. It's been a lot of fun watching this team so far. And now, you know, I'm happy that the Giants decided to go to 6:45. So we will be watching the games tomorrow and the next night at 9:45 instead of like 10:15. As we are usually do, I think with the Dodgers ones, it's 10:10. But alas, you know, just give it, 15 minutes. That helps just a tad, a little bit more, so we're not going till 2 or 3 in the morning. And so, yeah, anyway, enjoy everybody out there. Enjoy this West Coast trip. Let's continue charging on. Let's beat these Giants that so far have not been as prolific as they were last year, and just keep on pushing, as Mike alluded to. Let's go Mets, everybody. Take care. Thanks, guys.
Good night. All.